I would say like most of the main kind of sonic change that is very relevant to this album probably happened this past year with COVID.
That's Alyssa Murray. I'm Jamie Green. And this is Trading Fours.
Till my daydream.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of Trading Fours. I hope you're doing well. You're listening to Alyssa Murray's new album called Half and Half. Alyssa joined me to talk all about this great new EP and what she's been up to. And we're going to get all into that in just a second. But before we do, got a little bit of housekeeping. First, next Tuesday, which is just in a couple days, March 30th, 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time, I am doing a live event that you can find on both Facebook and YouTube. Well, I will be interviewing the amazing mixing engineer out of Nashville, Billy Decker. Billy has a new book out all about how to use templates to do your recording. And I know that I have a fair amount of you that are recording nerds, including Alyssa, who want to hear all about this. Billy is known as not only being one of the top mixing engineers in Nashville and has done tons of hits, he's also one of the quickest. And the way that he is the quickest is that he uses templates ahead of time so he can just kind of dump things in and go. And you can learn a lot. I'm actually about three quarters through his book, and even this schmo, has learned a bunch about how to be better with mixing and mastering. So I'll put in the show links how to check that out. Please be a part of it if you're interested. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Alyssa Murray. Alyssa has a new album out, like I just said. She's a great piano player, singer, does it all. And this is a really interesting conversation because as you can hear, this is not traditional jazz, people. This is something really interesting. And I think it's great. She's going to tell you from the time in 2015 when she did her last album until today with this album, what's changed? Why the pivot? What made her go in a different way? I sure glad that she did because it's really interesting to listen to. So why don't we get started? Here's my conversation with Alyssa Murray. You ready to get started?
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
Well, I appreciate you joining me on Trading Fours. I had a chance to listen to the new EP and really dug it. And let's talk about this. So I have seen your website and listened to your stuff back. Was it 2015 was the last album?
Yeah, it was 2015.
This is quite a departure.
Yeah, it's much different from the live studio album for sure.
So it's kind of cool. So I was expecting, so you know, I tell everybody this. I don't stalk you too much. I try not to, but I want to be prepared, right? Don't want some schmo to get on and be like, who are you and what do you do? So I was like, I saw some of your traditional jazz stuff, like you were playing in a club on a stand-up piano and you were playing. And so I was like, okay, I'm kind of getting ready for that. And then I get this and, you know, I'm a child of, you know, I was 12 years old when the 80s started.
Yeah.
So, you know, like Yaz and Till Tuesday and all these bands that were just like that keyboard thing with stuff. And that's not what you're doing per se, but you can hear some of the hints of that. So what was the genesis? What happened between 2015 and 2021?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. I would say like most of the main kind of sonic change that is very relevant to this album probably happened this past year with COVID and just getting grounded as a musician. Like before like last March, I was consistently playing out live in clubs. You know, I had my own original stuff, but I wasn't producing. And I think that's definitely where the change happened this year, was just like focusing in on recording and like how much that opened up, like for me as an artist, but also just like as a fan, and just like how much more music I get out of listening to all types of music now, or especially recordings. Like I'll go back to like a Justin Timberlake album and, you know, pull so much of it from it vocally, or I'll find a new artist or beat maker today and also get so much from it. And I don't think that was happening like a year ago or so. So it's just, yeah, it's been a crazy year creatively. And I feel like this album definitely kind of embodies that.
Right.
Well, it gave me a focal point.
No, it's really cool. I mean, I dug a lot of it, and you know, I knew you sang a little bit, but I really dug what you did vocally.
Thanks.
I don't want to say like pretty is such a bad word for it, but you have a beautiful voice. And really added to it too. And let's talk of, so there's six tracks on this.
Yes.
So what's the EP called?
It's called Half and Half.
All right.
And it's referencing, it's half beats and half vocal tunes.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot for the album promo and for the video for Thanks, the first single, we played off of Half and Half, the dairy product.
Right.
There's a lot of like milk theme kind of with this album, or breakfast themes that kind of came out. The Half and Half's the title.
You need to get Chateau Milk up and
I know. Maybe that's the next step. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Brought to you by Chateau Milk.
That's a good brand.
Actually, I know Matt Chateau a little bit.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. A long time ago, but anyway. So let's back up a little bit for people that don't know you.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Hayes, Kansas.
Yes.
So how does somebody who from Hayes, Kansas, gets into jazz piano to start with?
Yeah. So I started off on guitar. And that was with a jazz guitarist, and that was around 12. So like through him, I got quickly exposed to improv, because that's kind of where his mindset was, and, you know, jazz standards and kind of the repertoire that goes with that. But I was really interested in songwriting and kind of expanding myself that way, even though I didn't really sing. I sung in school and whatnot, but it didn't feel like I sing. But I also was like 13 or so. So I started doing piano, and I started just doing like classical rep and like formal lessons. And through there is where I came back to jazz again. And I was starting to look at like, what would I like to do beyond my high school years for sure. And I wanted to study music, and I wanted to study piano, but I didn't know how much. I was listening to jazz throughout that too. And so it just kind of formed together. Is I started studying jazz piano, and there's a university there, Fort Hays State University. And so during high school, I got exposure to some higher level, like, you know, academic university jazz. And that helped me a lot, just get exposure outside of Hayes.
Right.
And then UMKC sent me just like a scholarship offer due to my like ACT score. It really wasn't even very music related, but it put the conservatory there kind of in my mind. And so I went and auditioned there and ended up studying with Bobby Watson and Dan Thomas, which was like, I had a really good experience there. And that was about 11 years ago. So I've been in KC about 10 years.
That's great.
So, yeah.
So Bobby's on my list of people I want to talk to. I'll get to him eventually.
Yeah.
So for people that don't know, so there was a jazz group, Art Blakely, Jazz Messengers,
and yes,
he was this drummer phenomena that nurtured musicians for generations, decades.
Yeah.
And Bobby Watson was part of that group toward the end, and actually I think he was his musical director, correct?
Yeah.
And this was quite a coup when Kansas City got Bobby to come, you know, and Bobby'd been in New York for a long time, to come and set up this conservatory.
Yeah.
So for somebody like you, right, that comes from Hayes, Kansas. Was it terrifying when you had to go?
It was
audition?
I would say like even the first year, it was just, you know, kind of getting thrown in to the fire, so to say. And it was a really good program. It had a really good focus and intensity. But I felt like my peer network here was awesome. Like anywhere from people in my class to the people that were both in the first two classes of me or 2 years older than me, was like a really super strong class. And so just being around all those people that were really supportive helped a lot during those times.
So who were some of these people?
So that class I'm talking about that was like 2 years older than me. It's like Andrew Ouellette, who's a pianist in town. Brian Stever is a drummer. Ryan Lee.
Yeah, yeah.
Also there. Eddie Moore was there at that time. And he was a really great support and influence. And he's a super, super active performer in KC and synth player too. He's got his own studio going. Yeah. And whatnot. Yeah.
No, and then go ahead.
And then just, you know, the professionals already on the scene that usually are probably teaching us, like Doug Ogwater, Roger Wilder, Brom Winans.
Yeah, just a bunch of schmoes.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole community is there.
No, that's great. I've had Doug on. Eddie, yeah, he's awesome. I would like to have Eddie on too. I'm sure, dude. You know, I've had Doug on, and I've had Danny Embry on, and I've had Stan Kessler on, and all these guys that are just not only phenomenal players, right, but just seem like they're very giving.
Yeah.
Very happy to share what they know and try to nurture.
Yeah.
Positions, correct.
Most definitely, and that's so important in a jazz setting, I feel like.
So, were your parents musical, or was this just your own?
No, my parents are not very musical. They're insanely supportive, though, but they are not. They don't have any. Yeah, they didn't. I think my mom took piano when she was younger, and like most people, was turned off by it and didn't really follow through. And my dad played a little bit of guitar. Like, he knows like Over the Hills and Far Away by Led Zeppelin, like a little bit of it. So, but yeah, they weren't serious about it.
So you have siblings?
I don't. I'm an only child.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was it one of those things? What made you just like love it so much? Were there certain acts that you heard that you were like, wow, I really like that? What kind of got you going?
I think my initial like super early influences, like in middle school, when I first like picked up an instrument, I really loved like Jeff Buckley, Fiona. Yeah. It definitely is a huge influence on me. And
your cool factor just went up about
a thousandfold. Yeah. Jeff Buckley is a big one. And the artists I found through him, I found like Rufus Wainwright. And I think it probably had to do with like the Hallelujah cover, but that like branched out into like one of my super influences. Again, yeah. Rufus. And then Fiona Apple has always been a very big influence of mine. And those were like my initial like singer-songwriter.
So what year would this have been?
Probably like 05.
So Jeff 06. Buckley was already long gone by the time you discovered. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still bummed about it.
Yeah. You're still...
Well, you know, it's just one of those things where you hear somebody that's that good. Jeff Buckley's one of those guys where like everybody that like, hears him, like falls in love with what he can do.
And, yeah.
There was so much potential left, you know?
Yeah.
I think he was 30 when he died.
Yeah, it was not old at all.
And just all of it, the voice, the songwriting, all of it's made. But that makes sense. I think everybody does that. When you find somebody you like, you're like, let's go backwards. Let's see who did they listen to, right? It's like a discovery. Sure. And it's a very fun rabbit hole you can go down through.
Oh, yes. That's how I find a lot of artists that influence me.
So are your friends like, saying, Alyssa, what are you listening to? Or were they get into it too? Or would they just think that, you know, you're crazy? What was the reaction?
I feel like, you know, that's a good question. Yeah, my listening at the time, that's what I'm trying to think about. I think that most of my friends would probably are kind of in that territory. I remember I had a friend in eighth grade give me like an Elliott Smith CD, and we bonded over that and whatnot. I feel like, when I think about finding Jeff Buckley and finding Rufus Wainwright and even finding Fiona Apple, it all was kind of private. It was kind of like in my bedroom, like in our home office with me and like Real One Player, which was like the digital distribution at the time or one of them. And just like kind of through the internet in some way, finding these artists. It wasn't so much like through my younger peers. I really do think it was more like through internet forums and
it's not a bad way to spend
your
time. Yeah,
it's not.
No, I, you know, Fiona's, I've got a couple of her albums.
Yeah.
She just does things that's really, really interesting to me, sonically.
Yes.
And sometimes it's not what I'm expecting. She'll be, and it's like, that's not where I thought she was going to go with it, but it, you know, it's why she's her and why I'm me, right?
Yeah.
It's great. Super cool.
Yes.
So you said that the COVID made you come. So let's talk about the album and it made you kind of pivot and stuff. So how much have you done? Had you done a lot of programming? Had you done a lot of recording before on your own?
I have a project with my boyfriend called Merman. And I mentioned that because he's the one who he got into recording like way before me, like in 2016 or so. And he brought in Ableton, which is like the DAW I work from. And sorry if I get too detailed about.
No, you're good. So for people who don't know, a DAW is a digital audio workstation.
Yes.
So this is like Pro Tools. This podcast is on Reaper. There's like 7 or 8 that you can use. So that's.
Yes. So he started getting into recording and getting more serious about it. And so I got exposure through there, and we have a project. We did a live performance with it, like a live showcase with it. And we performed a tracks that we had, you know, produced and recorded. And so we kind of, you know, did the tracking live performance crossover. And so that gave me exposure to kind of maybe a direction to go. And just I have access to what he has access to is another big thing, is like, you know, we share Ableton. And
what's his name? He should get a
Adam Schlesman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I've heard of Adam.
Yes, he's a great guitarist, and he's been on the KC scene for quite a while.
Freaking good guitar players in this town.
There's a lot of guitarists.
That's why you'll never see me play jazz guitar in Kansas City. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, it's a hard entry point for sure.
No, it's like, and it's been that way forever. It's been like generations of that. Well, that's great. So you kind of collaborate together. Let's talk about this from a couple standpoint. Do you like have ideas that he helps you execute? Is it like that? Or is it just a pure collaboration? Like, hey, this is what
I'm thinking. It's a little more pure. We co-wrote songs. You know, it's kind of a mix of things. Like, we definitely had two like truly like co-written songs where like we both contributed to the chord progression, like the actual musical aspect. Since I'm this vocalist and the keyboardist, like I tend to do more of the vocals and the lyric writing and, you know, the keyboard parts for the most, but like the more, I guess, busy keyboard parts and whatnot. So it also can be a little more like, oh, I came to him with this song and we are going to figure out how to produce it. That happens too. We've had a whole mix of stuff, it seems like.
So instead of watching Tiger King and
Benji, oh, we did that too.
Oh, did you do that too?
Yeah.
You were productive with your time though. You did.
Yeah.
That's cool. So I've had I'm trying to think how many different couples I've had on. This is an interesting dynamic to me. I love my wife dearly. We've been married for 22 and a half years now, and she's great, but she's not musical. So I'm always kind of intrigued about how this works.
For
instance, when we cook, I'm the cleanup guy. Like, she takes the lead. Like, there's certain defined roles. Yeah. Is that true too with this? Like, there's certain things that like, hey, I got this part, you handle that part kind of thing. How do you divvy out the tasks?
I feel like when I look back a year ago, because I was less experienced with recording and production, like I was a little more dependent on Adam on like getting the recording or having the studio set up. And, you know, he was definitely probably the more of the leader in that sense, like behind the desk and like running the DAW and, you know, kind of creatively running things. And now I feel like it's kind of changed how we work together, because I'm more independent. Like, I go up to like my studio here. Right. And I can lay down the whole vocal part and take my time on doing things. And it doesn't feel like it's dragging down or I'm in like a really serious studio session and I'm wasting someone's time or anything like that. Yeah. So
there's a lot of freedom with that, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. And that's kind of what.
Go ahead.
Or that's what led me to Half and Half. Like, this EP was just like starting my own studio and focusing in on kind of like what do I sound like in this format? Because, I mean, geez, it's so broad. Even like the word producer means like so many different things to so many different people, you know?
Right. So. It's come so far. So when I was in college, probably before you were born, I took a recording studio class because I was interested for an elective. And at the time it was 16 tracks. Maybe it was 32 tracks, maybe 32, but it was physical tape.
Yeah.
So if you screwed up, you have to punch in and punch out. And it's like, you only have so many takes because the tape kind of will start to degrade. And you know, it was a completely different animal. Some ways liked it because, you know, back then you had musicians, like you couldn't fake it. Like, you had to be pretty good to record it. But now it's made it very egalitarian. Would you agree that this is everybody can do this in their home? You don't have to spend a fortune. You don't have to record at the middle of the night because the studio's half price. And then you know, have to freak out. Like, I can only afford X amount of hours.
Yeah. Right? I mean, oh man, absolutely. And just technology is, it's just crazy. Like I, speaking of Jeff Buckley, I was watching a Mixing with the Masters, which is like, yeah. And I actually probably, I bought the subscription just because of they talked to Andy Wallace, who is the producer on that, and so many other things. But it was just him. It's pretty much just Andy producing that all of Grace. Like it was just him and Jeff, and he talks about the whole thing. But he references a plugin that I have, and it's like, oh, like you know, you can do it too. Like he says, it's great. Like it actually mimics the hardware super well, and it's just like small like nuggets like that. Especially when you're just starting out producing, it's like, oh man, like I am kind of in the like this is the territory we're in now. Is like. You know, no, yeah, you can do it at home.
That's great. I'm glad I don't own a recording studio.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it wouldn't be, I don't think I'd be real happy right now.
Yeah. I definitely, I got my mixing and mastering done with Dwayne Trower at Weights and Measures. So I don't do my own mixing yet, but.
So you just dump it up on like a Google file or you bring it in on the, how do you send it to him?
I print my stems or like basically each individual track. And for the most part, I took off all like mixing related things like EQ compression and whatnot. But if, but yeah, I kept like, if it had a particular delay on something that I really wanted, I kept it. And we just kind of worked with it that way.
Yeah,
it wasn't too many errors. So that was good.
No. Most mixing guys that I know, in fact, not to plug myself, I swear I don't want to be that guy, but I actually have, I'm doing a live thing with a guy that I actually went to college with and we were buddies in college. He's one of the top engineers in Nashville.
Yeah.
And so he has a new book called Template Mixing and Mastering. Anyway, so he, I don't know, 20 something number one hits in country he's done, which is ironic because he's a rock and roll dude like me. That's how we hung out.
Yeah.
But when I send him stuff, cause he's nice. Sometimes he mixes things for me for free. Because we've been friends for 35 years.
That's so
it's
nice.
Always like, send it to me dry. Do not, I don't want, don't put anything on it.
Yeah.
He's like that. No, don't do that.
Yeah. It like, it leaves them with nothing to do or it kind of.
Or he hates it. Like that sounds like shit. Like, don't do that.
I know what to do. Exactly.
That's great. Yeah. So when's this coming out? When can people, Alyssa, get it?
The first single Thanks will be out April 2nd. So Friday, and then the full EP will be out May 14th on Friday.
And how is it on everywhere in the world that you can find
it
music?
Should be. I believe so. I believe I checked all the boxes on the, if it should be Spotify for sure. Bandcamp for sure. Amazon, kind of the major outlets.
And when you, and we talked about this offline before we started this, but since the world's starting to open up, do you have some plans to present this? To folks, you want to play it live? What do you want to do with it?
Not so much with, I think right now my plan is to, I just didn't have anything planned for this. It's crazy to think about even like 3 months ago where my headspace was when it came to live shows and whatnot. So I think for now, I'm going to keep recording and making some things that are kind of in this territory. And then hoping like August or like later fall to do some live shows where it's a combination of things off this EP plus some newer things I have cooked up this summer. And then,
that's great. What else? Yeah. So when you like to play out live, what do you, so let's just say, you know, money's not an object.
Yeah.
What kind of music? Like if I just said, hey, Alyssa, let's, you know, I've got some great players. Let's jam. Let's play something. What would you like to play? What do you like to play live?
That's a good question.
Yeah. That's why I do this.
Let's see. So like, are we like out in front of people or are we just like jamming
it? We can do it. Let's do it. Let's do it twofold. We'll make this fun.
Okay.
Daryl Hall of Hall & Oates fame has heard your album and loves it and says, hey, come to my live from Daryl's house and you get to play with my band and we play whatever you want.
Okay.
What do you pick?
That's a good fit. Like, cause I'm not even sure what that person would know, but I know they would know a lot. Maybe like a Stevie Wonder tune. I think Stevie Wonder is such a good entry point for like so many people that... That's a good, they're great jammers too. And they're, you know, they're usually vocal focused too. And it kind of includes everyone.
Like Sir Duke, what are you thinking?
Oh, really? Let's do. Yeah, Sir Duke would be awesome. I've played Golden Lady before for a jam and that's a good one.
Yeah, early Stevie Wonder is fabulous.
Yeah. My Sharia more, but that's kind of a chill. That's more of a chill kickback. Right. But that has really good changes. And
no, that's interesting. Yeah. I love his 70s stuff. He's never coming on this podcast, so I can say this.
Yeah.
Like the 80s stuff, I was not, didn't really do for me.
I mean, the golden era, the 70s.
Was it Talk Book? What's the album that's that one? There's one of those albums that's just, anyway. Well, that's cool. And then if you had to play in Kansas City, what floats your boat? What would you like to do? Like for fun, like, but with a crowd, what are you going to play? You're going to play traditional. You're going to do the songbook. You're going to do whatever you want. Play Fiona Apple.
Probably going to play my new stuff. Okay. I'm thinking. Yeah. But also I would love, like, sometimes I wonder if I should do like a Fiona Apple tribute or like just Fiona themed karaoke one night with everyone or something. Yeah.
You know how many drunk people
love
that.
I'll be there.
Well, you know, I got a 90s band, so if you want to ever show up,
I know. It's like,
bring your keyboard and we'll do some Fiona Apple.
Yes,
we can do that. We can do some No Doubt. I'm trying to think what else we could do that would be good that has kind of keyboardy 90s stuff.
Yeah,
we could figure it out. What's that one song that I'm gonna space on it? I'll think of it in a second. That'd be fun though.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we did the Women in Rock show, we did Sunday Morning by No Doubt. You remember that song?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So there's some fun 90s songs that with the keyboard kind of thing going.
Most definitely. There's synths everywhere.
It's an open invitation. Just show up sometime. We'll plug you in. So when people want to follow you, hearing this for the first time, like, what are you the most active on? What would be the best place for them to find you?
I'd say my Instagram is probably where I get the most immediate. I put the most immediate action and info. And then my website, it's soon to be updated with all the new fresh stuff. But that's also a really great place to find me, lissamariemusic.com.
And I'll put all these links in the episode so people, when they're listening to this, they can just click on it and it'll take them right there.
Awesome.
That's great. So I was going to ask you another thing about it. So who do you like to go see in town? Let's say the world's open up. It's July. You and Adam have a night off. You're not playing. Who do you want to go out and see?
Yeah, I really like Peter Schlamm and Matt Villander. Whatever those two are up to or putting out is really, really good. Yeah, and then
crazy good.
Yeah. Let me think who else. I really love, this is a venue, but Corvino Supper Club and Tasting Room. I used to play there every Monday. It's a restaurant. It's not really a venue. It feels kind of like a venue a little bit. But
Just yourself, or did you have somebody with you?
I was solo mainly on Mondays, but I've played there with various groups too.
Is it just instrumental?
Yeah, it was just like straightforward piano.
Just straight jazz.
But I also did, actually, that's not true. It was like a year ago, so I have to think back quite a bit. But I also would sing, I would do covers, and I did anything from like Usher, Jeff Buckley, Fiona Apple, Weezer. I had a good I said Say It Ain't So was always a really big hit.
Oh, I bet you people loved it.
Yeah.
Which and Buckley then, tunes did you do?
I believe I tried to do Mojo Pin.
All right.
I went home. Yeah. And then was it Last Goodbye? I think Last Goodbye was another one.
That's probably I know that's kind of popular of his stuff, but that's probably that and Vancouver are my two favorite Jeff Buckley tunes. So
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
No, this is great. This is so much fun to me. I can't wait to meet you in person and get to see you play out.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that people follow you. And like you said, that the first track out is Thanks, which is the first track on the album as well. And that's going to be out soon. And then the album will be out. And, you know, I do this because I'm trying to get the word out on musicians and have people support. Because, you know, it's been a really hard year for musicians.
Yeah.
A lot of people are kind of hurting quite a bit. So any way that people can support you and what you do, that would be great.
You know, the song Two Peaches, that's my favorite. What's with the name?
The name has nothing to do with
the song. It doesn't. It actually, so that one, that's a good story. And this one actually has John Kazillermut on drums and then Adam Schlossman's on bass. He's my boyfriend. And then, this one came about, and the Two Peaches came from, I originally came up with the main chord progression playing along to, I found like a recording of like a toy. I forgot, it's like Droopy the Dragon or something. And it was like a Texas instrument and someone like recorded it out. And I don't know, I found it on like a plugin, I actually believe. And it was just like, one apple tastes good, two peaches taste better, three watermelons taste best. And it kind of had, it had some melodic interest to it. So I was able to write a chord progression around it and eventually got eliminated, that kind of robot voice thing. But I kept the title. I didn't want to change it.
So when you write things out, do you physically write charts out for everybody, or you just do it in your head?
I think I used to be a little more directly to chart, just because my format used to be like, I need a band to kind of, I need other musicians to help me like come up with the groove. When I think about my first album, that was mainly like me at home writing it out a little bit more. Recently, especially with these last six, it's like producing and kind of working with the DAW directly, it's kind of changed how I write, and just thinking more about sign design or sound design has kind of changed. Yeah.
I was just going to say, so you're a, you know, when you're a schooled musician, you spend a lot of time and money, right?
Yeah.
At the conservatory. So, I mean, this is, I can't do this. This is something, I mean, I can look at a chart and you can put a, and I know what it is. But my dad used to do this, where you can, you chart out stuff and parts for musicians and stuff. And so it's interesting to hear, because, you know, there's some people super stickler, like they just want, they're going to write every note, every single note, everything, and you play it exactly the way that they want it when they're doing it. And there's other people that's like, no, you're good, dude. You're like, here are the changes.
Yeah.
See what you got. So I'm curious, like what you like.
I'm a little more open-ended, because usually I'm just presenting to like a rhythm section. And so there it's like, all right, here's the form, here's the changes. I'm usually singing over it, so I don't really have that detail in there. It just depends. If I were to have like an orchestra need to, or I don't know, like a more intense arrangement, like a larger ensemble or even like a chamber ensemble or something, I would want it to be like very, probably more thorough. It depends how well the person knows me too, or if like how well my bandmates know me too. If right. I give them a ton of detail, or how much time do we have to rehearse, or like, you know, just information exchange.
So as a pianist, do you find historically through time, are there certain piano players that you like, you really, really like, you know, Monk or Brubeck or Tatum or
whoever? I really like Chick Corea, I think has been, and I know he just passed away recently, but yeah, he's been a great influence on me playing wise and his writing.
Yeah, I got to see Chick here with Bella Fleck.
Yeah.
Did you go to that show?
I didn't get to see him with Bella. I saw him with Gary Burton, which is pretty. Those guys have played for so long together.
Yeah, it was really cool. You know, and obviously I feel badly for Chick's friends and family, but it was so weird. He seemed so healthy, right?
Until... I know. Yeah. Yeah, he was very active, like putting out information and
like 15 years younger than he was. I mean, he looked great.
That's how you end it. That's how you go.
I mean, if you got, everybody's got to go at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the, you know, the Jim Morrison line, nobody gets out of here alive. I mean, I guess the fact that he was able to perform and right up till the last minute.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to be said for that. So Chick, it, like you said, the songwriting, what kind of stuff that he wrote that you just like piqued your interest from an ear standpoint?
Yeah. Anything from like Now He Sings, Now He Sobs, that trio album is excellent. And I would say just, he has a very particularly, I don't know, I want to say angular, but some of his songs can be very angular, so to say, and just really great, just great changes.
No, he was ridiculously good.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. I'll let you go. So is there anything on your iPhone or however you listen to music that people would be shocked that you listen to, like a guilty pleasure?
Oh man. I listen to so much stuff. I definitely have like I have a pop streak. I think it's nostalgia based. But
so what's nostalgia for you? I'm curious.
Oh yeah, that's a good. It's different for everyone. Yeah. For me, it's probably like early 2000s hip hop, or just early like even before then, probably like pop, Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's been funny, like getting into production again. I think I mentioned, kind of rambled on this earlier. Like listening back to other things, it's like whoa. Like before, I used to just like get the vocal part and the key changes or the chord changes, and now it's like so crazy to listen to a recording because there's just so much to pull from it. So it's I just really enjoyed that. It makes me feel less guilty about listening to things that maybe feel less relevant to me as a musician in some way, if that makes sense.
No, it makes total sense. But you know, if you're a national act with that much backing and money behind
you. Yeah, the team effort is just amazing in itself, for sure.
Yeah, they're not going to have just schmoes producing, no. Engineering. And Christina is, I mean, she's ridiculously good.
Yeah, she's a good artist for sure. I listen to Justin Bieber. I've even listened to, and that's one that, like, talking about the team, it's like, I've always listened to it and been like, why do I like this? Like, what particularly is happening, or like, who wrote this that makes it just so, I don't know, catchy and whatnot?
No, it's I love it. It's the 21st century version of the Tin Pan Alley, right?
Yes.
He's a product. I mean, I hate to be making that business wise, but it's true. And they're there to make market and sell that product as much mm-hmm. as, in fact, do you Rick Beato? Do you ever watch his YouTube?
Yeah. Page?
So he found some new tune of Justin Bieber, which is exactly the same as a Toto song. Did you see that?
No. Oh my gosh.
Not only is it in the same key, not only is it the same chord changes, it's the same melody over it.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, well, Toto just gets to sue.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can make the argument, well, it's the same chords, but it's a different melody over it. But when it's even in the same key, they were so lazy, they didn't even change the key.
That's so goofy. There was like some
8 songwriters on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No one knows the Toto as thoroughly. That's true, too. Yeah, there was something else to do with Splice, which is, I don't know how to describe it, like a sample subscription for producers to get like good sounds and for people to sell them. And one of them just uses, one of the Justin Bieber songs uses a Splice sample, and it's just not changed at all. And it was one of the songs I was like, ooh, I like this one. And then it was just had a weird story around it. And yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to meet you virtually. Nice to meet you too. I hope to meet you in person at some point and say hello. Always appreciate it. I thank you for sending the album. I liked it. You know, I always try, and I'm not going to get into this too much, but you know, people on keyboard approach music writing different than guitar players.
Yeah.
It's different. So I'm always interested, like for instance, I have an acoustic duo band and we play Leave On, the Elton John song.
Yeah.
And there's chords in that. It's like a guitar player would never use that chord. It's just like, anyway. So I'm always interested to hear what a piano player will do. So I appreciate you sending it. I'll make sure to put in the show links where to find you. I wish you well. I think it's great that you are able to collaborate. And I hope that this is a big success.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks
for having
me. All
right. Have a good day, Alyssa. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Pulled the rug out from under, stop all the magic carpet rides in the sky. Went to hell in a basket, dropped off the earth in record.
Again, name of the album is Half and Half. The artist is Alyssa Murray. Had so much fun talking to Alyssa. And now you know where this song, Two Peaches, what was the impetus? What made her write it? That's a pretty cool, interesting story. I'd never heard somebody getting an idea from something like that. So thanks so much to Alyssa Murray. Everything you want to know about Alyssa, anywhere you want to buy her album, check her out. It's all in the show links, people. I know I say that every week, but it's true. Check it out. So thanks to her. And real quick, once again, I have got next Tuesday, just in 2 days, the live Facebook Live and YouTube Live with Billy Decker. His book is Template Mixing and Mastering, the ultimate guide to achieving a professional sound. He's got 37 5-star ratings up here. That's such a Billy Decker thing. Always such a good guy. He does a good job. So be sure to check on that. It's in the show notes too. And that's going to do it for today's Trading 4. But next time, we're staying in Kansas City. I have got Mensa Death Squad's Brandon Phillips. And I think a lot of you in town probably know about Brandon. They've got a new album out. And well, he has a new album out, so check that out. That'll be up in a week. Until then, go out and support live music, and we'll talk real soon. Bye bye. Take that leap of faith, oh, any way to save someone.